former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is hour number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network on a conference championship Saturday. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. We will get back to the college football coming up here in 30 minutes with our buddy Matt Eumanns, who will be joining us in studio to give us his NFL and college football plays here for conference championship Saturday. But we kick off hour number two with a little bit of NFL discussion. And before we get into the Lombardi look ahead, the Hall & Oates play and the line of the week, we got to discuss the quarterback shakeup in Cleveland, where the Browns will be starting none other than former Super Bowl MVP Joe Flacco against the Los Angeles Rams. It's been a while since he won that Super Bowl MVP back in the 2012 season, but Flacco will be the QB with Dorian Thompson-Robinson being unable to clear the concussion protocol. Right now, the line is at Rams 4-point favorites, total sitting at 40.
You know, look, Flacco has struggled. I think he's, what, 0-10 in his last game straight up, or 1-11, something like that. He hasn't played well. We know that, right? I think the last game, wasn't he the quarterback for the Jets when they came back and beat the Browns?
It was.
That game where they scored 14 points in the last 2 minutes of the game. So he gives them an experienced player at the position. And I think what Cleveland is at the point of their season with is they just don't want to make a mistake. They're going to go into Los Angeles. They're going to be a bunch of Browns backers out there. They'll have the stadium filled up. And if Myles Garrett can play with his shoulder, which I think he will be able to, they can dominate the line of scrimmage against any team they play, and specifically they can against the Rams. The Rams will struggle. When Sean McVay can't run the football, it's a problem. When he can't run outside zone, it's a bigger problem. And one thing we do know for sure, Femi, is that the Kyle Shanahan system, whenever it's going against Jim Schwartz, Schwartz has been the dominant coach. He beat him this year in Cleveland. I know Wynn was a factor in that game, but they really did a nice job on shutting down the 49er offense. They can do the same against the Rams. What they can't do is have their quarterback give the game away. And so what I think by signing Flacco, it gives them a veteran at the position. It gives them somebody that can get them into the right run, the right check, the right protection call, and not feel like they're off kilter. Remember, Flacco played for Gary Kubiak in Baltimore. Okay? Gary Kubiak trained Kevin Stefanski. This offense has a lot of the Kubiak elements to it. So it's a natural transition for him to step onto the field, make the calls, feel very comfortable, and look, just don't make a mistake. Give us an opportunity to convert some third downs, give us a chance to get the ball to Cooper, and see if we can win 3-4 more games for the rest of the year just playing good defense and special teams.
Do you think that just for this particular game, and I'm not sure what the upside will eventually be for Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he's still early in his career, but for this particular game, like, do you think that Flacco, even if DTR was healthy, would give them the best chance to win this game?
I do. I think Flacco gives them the best chance to win for the rest of the year. Mm. We know PJ Walker doesn't give them the best chance. DRT is just a little too inconsistent, and it's not his fault. He hasn't played a lot in the NFL. You know, and so even though he was able to win the game 13-10 against Pittsburgh, led him on that drive, which was good. You know, there were obviously there are other plays in there. Look, Cleveland's done a great job. Stefanski's done a great job of kind of working around the injuries. The only concern you have in this game is, can Cleveland's defense play well on the road? That's something that they haven't really done. You know, when they went into Baltimore, Baltimore moved the ball on them, right? When they went to Indy, Indy moved the ball on them. Indy had a hell of a day against them. When they went down to Pittsburgh, they really didn't. Pittsburgh had 255 total yards, but 70 on one play. So they're going to have to prove they can play really good defense. Last week, you know, Wilson throws for a 125, and they win because they turned the ball over three times, gave them field position, and couldn't do anything offensively. So it's, you know, the last 3 weeks since the Baltimore game, since Watson gotten hurt, they haven't thrown for over 200 yards, Femi, and five of the last six, seven games they haven't either.
Maybe Flacco will give them a little bit more production in the passing game. Wide receiver Amari Cooper is hoping so. Earlier this week, he said, when Joe Flacco drops back and lets it go, it's like poetry in motion. So they're confident in Joe Flacco. It does look
He gives them a sense of, look, I've done this before, right? You know, and they need that, right? they need a little boost offensively because this is a very winnable game for them. I was on Russo yesterday. I took the Browns in his contest with his numbers. Where they come from, I don't know. It was four on the sheet, so I took the four. You know, I think it's a three-point game. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, so I actually think the Browns should be a slight favorite based on just defensively. I think people are over-evaluating the Rams' win against the Arizona Cardinals. Well, the Rams are always going to win games when they can run the football. And the Cardinals, you can run the ball on them fairly easily. So when the Rams run for 228, I'm not surprised. You know, the week before, they got fortunate to beat a Seattle team, even though they only ran for 82 yards. Seattle's sitting there kicking themselves. Yeah. Where Seattle's season went away from them is Myers hasn't been very reliable in kicking.
Yeah, that was the kick that was missed as time expired in that game. Seattle, if they don't make the playoffs, they're going to be kicking themselves about this Rams getting the swept kicker. By Los Angeles and the kicker and all that stuff. Like, that's going to be the one where they're like, man, we really could have put our own destiny in our own hands there. But unfortunately, they did not. Let's get to the Lombardi look ahead here and talk about a game, of course, that you want no parts of. This one happens to be in the Meadowlands.
Yeah. I mean, what did I read today? I read today in the New York Post when I read the Post this morning, Jets playoff hopes dwindling. Like, where do they have playoff hopes? Like, where has this hope come from? And, you know, look, I've been on Atlanta's side quite a bit this year. They've actually done me pretty good, believe it or not. I mean, they've actually won me some games in terms of, like, last week they covered. It's a struggle. I mean, you're holding your breath the entire game, right? Because these two coaches are really not very good against the spread. But you got one team, Atlanta, that needs to run the ball. You got another team in the Jets that, in spite of this reputation of being this incredibly great defense, that they could compete with the 85 Bears, you can run the football. They're 31st in the National League in terms of teams coming in running the football on them. Rushing attempts. Nobody has a problem with lining up and running the ball on them. Atlanta will run the ball. They can run the ball on anybody. So for me, Atlanta runs the ball. How the Jets score points. Then you got weather, rain, slosh, all those things. I don't trust either side. Ritter's turned the ball over way too much for me. The Jets don't score any points at all. They haven't scored over 15 points since the bye week. I mean, they're terrible on offense. They can't convert a third down to save. They're 22% on third down. I mean, they could punt on second down. It might do them better. So I don't trust the Jets. I certainly don't trust the Falcons. And on the road outside the dome, when you look at the splits for Ritter, you just say to yourself, wait a minute, this isn't good. You know, look at the splits for Timmy Boyle. He's 2-2 against the spread. He's 0-4 as a starter. I just think, to me, this is a game where I don't like either side. So I call up Daryl and I call up John. I make sure they're in separate parts of the room because we don't want to get them mad at each other because they're in court, and just let them sing.
Yeah, well, there's a restraining order. That's why we have them separated there. So Falcons, Jets, the official Hall & Oates play of the week.
I can't go for that. No, no can do.
You know, you mentioned that maybe the Jets would be better off punting on
would
second
down. Would you play
down. It? No, hell
would
no.
Would you take
no.
this?
No, absolutely not. I don't have this on my betting card. I don't want any parts of it. I agree.
Arthur Smith ranks 135th out of 143 coaches in the last 20 seasons. And last in the last 49 coaches that have been hired when he was hired against the spread. I mean, like, how do you trust them? Like, every time you get a win from Atlanta against the spread, you just say, thank God I got that one. Now, but don't go back. Don't go twice on it. Nope. You know, don't go back again on it. Like, I wanted to take Atlanta. I wanted to because on paper, they can run the ball on the Jets. And their defense will play good enough against the Jets where the Jets won't score. They'll score their usual 13 if they can score 13. That's all they'll score. So it looks like a good play. It looks too easy. And to me, there's just too much uncertainty. I mean, look, you know, we all just think it's all Rodgers why the Jets haven't been able to score more than 13 points in the last 5 weeks. It's not. You know, and Breece Hall, for all the conversation of him being an elite back, he's not an elite back since the injury. He had the long run against the Bills in the opening day, but he has struggled down in and down out to play effectively, to break tackles, to make people miss, to show up. I mean, he has a 4.6 yards per attempt, but that's a lot of it contributed to the fact he had these long runs in there. His success rate is not good. And nobody can run the football. I think the Jets have two rushing touchdowns all year.
It's not been good for the New York Jets. The offensive line has had problems. They want to call for Nathaniel Hackett's head and all that stuff with the play caller.
In fairness, Femi, how do you not? You can't just say this is one player. You just can't. You know, it's unfair. The offense is similar to what we saw in Denver last year.
Was not good. And now Denver's winning games. Let's get to your line of the week, though. This is the game of the week that everyone's excited for, the Niners at the Eagles.
Well, I just didn't know where to go with this one. I can't trust that. I think Philly at home. I mean, when these games go in this swing, I think I had the numbers that, you know, they're a godly unheard of. All the people that have taken San Francisco in here, when the numbers go from in a 3-point swing, it's usually not good to the team it swung to. And it's well below 50%, well below that number. Look, I think everybody is, you know, you get Philly at 3 points as a home dog. I know they could be tired. I know it's going to be a hard game. I get that. But I don't know how to play. I don't know how to handicap Philly after they played 92 plays of defense last week. I think that'll be something we could talk about with Brian Baldinger in the next block. He's been around the team quite a bit. Like, how are they going to handle all the volume of work that has come to them since Kansas City and Buffalo?
Yeah, it's a tough stretch here for the Philadelphia Eagles. But as Michael just teased, Brian Baldinger, NFL Network analyst, joins us next here on the Lombardi Line, breaking down this game of the week and the rest from around the NFL.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. So our picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for only $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. And joining us now, absolutely one of my favorite follows, on Twitter. It has the hashtag Baldy's Breakdowns. They're wonderful for all football fans. The one and only Brian Baldinger, NFL Network analyst here joining us on the Lombardi Line. And Baldy, we appreciate you taking the time this morning. We know that you're on the road traveling to your game here. But want to start off with the Niners and the Eagles game of the week here in the betting market has an infatuation with the 49ers in this spot. Now, 3-point road favorites at the link here. Is that how you see it when you break down the tape? Do the Niners just have too many advantages for the Eagles, or are the Eagles being a little bit disrespected?
I don't think they're being disrespected. San Francisco is playing at a very, very high level right now. Offense, defense, everybody is, and they've had 10 days to get ready for this game playing on Thanksgiving. So I think they got it right. I think they look at how complete San Francisco is and how Philadelphia, you know, although they're in the middle of a gauntlet of playing, you know, a lot of great teams, I think San Francisco just executes at a higher level right now.
Yeah, Baldy, they you know, when you watch Philly this year, what's the one thing, forget the record, what's the one thing that jumps out to you that's different than when you watched them last year?
Like, they've already given up more touchdown passes this year than they gave up all of last year. I mean, the pass defense is about as poor as it gets. The only team that has given up more passing touchdowns this year in this whole league are the Commanders. And so that's not a stat that, you know, it's not as, like, sometimes you can make these stats do anything, right, Mike? But that stat jumps out at me. And, you know, they've had to overcome that now. The offense has been good enough to overcome it. But they have been very poor in the back end of their defense all year.
And you know what's funny when you say that? Because last year, I felt like you could attack Bradbury. I thought you could attack Slay. I know these guys have these reputations for being these great cover guys. But the line with their 70 sacks, 60 coming from their defensive line last year, covered up a lot of those problems. We saw them show up in the Super Bowl, but they kind of covered them up. But this year, They're not covering them up. And the fact that the Eagles don't jump ahead. Last year, they scored 206 points in the second quarter alone. This year, that offense doesn't seem to be operating at that same explosive level. Do you agree?
I do agree, Mike. I mean, the quarterback, I think, has improved in some ways because he's had to. I mean, he's had this bone bruise in his leg. He hasn't been quite the runner that he was a year ago. And so I do think that right now the pass rush isn't anywhere near what it was a year ago. They can brag about Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis, but they're not what Hargrave was a year ago inside. And, you know, they're not the same dynamic Brandon Graham, Josh Sweat, Hassan Reddick, you know, had over 50 sacks till last year. They don't have anywhere near that. And they did cover up a lot a year ago, Mike. And so, you know, if the pass rush starts turning up the heat, you might see more takeaways. But, you know, they had 17 interceptions last year, Mike. They've got a grand total of 6 so far. So I think the pressure that you're talking about isn't quite what we saw last year. And that leads to a lot of the breakdowns in the secondary. Plus, they, you know, outside of – they really haven't kept anybody healthy. And now they traded for Kevin Byard, who's a very good player, but he's trying to fit in back there with a lot of new people, and that's not easy to do.
We're speaking with Brian Baldinger, NFL Network analyst here, talking all things NFL here on the Lombardi Line. Well, Baldy, let's transition over to Sunday Night Football. I think this game's really interesting. Kansas City offensively looked like they found something last week against the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Packers have quietly been getting better, and they had a really impressive performance on Thanksgiving, beating the Detroit Lions as a 7.5-point underdog. The betting market is interested in Green Bay in this spot here. Do you think that the Packers can keep this a little bit more competitive than what the market thinks right now, the total sitting at 42.5 with the spread being a 6-point favorite for Kansas City?
Well, I think the difference in this game, I like what Green Bay is doing. I like the way they're building it. They got a lot of young players that are playing well, Jaden Reed, Jordan Love. I mean, you go through the whole list of them, but they haven't played a defense like Kansas City's yet. And I think Kansas City is as good as any defense in this league. And I think it's going to look a lot different than it did on Thanksgiving, where, you know, the Lions just aren't very good defensively. They don't really, you know, outside of Aiden Hutchinson, they don't really have much of a pass rush. That's not the case with Kansas City. So I think Jordan Love's going to be under a lot of pressure. Spags is a great defensive coordinator. He brings pressure from everywhere, yet they don't break down the back end of their defense. So while I like what Green Bay is doing, and I like the way they're playing defensively, and I think defensively they can keep the score down, I like Kansas City to win, and I think Green Bay is going to struggle quite a bit offensively in this game.
Hey, Baldy, you're going to do Washington and the Miami Dolphins, and the weather could be raining, not going to be that cold. Miami's offense, I know last week against the Jets they scored 34, but two touchdowns came from the defense. But they haven't been as explosive as they once were earlier in the season. And a lot of people think Washington will keep this game closer. What are your thoughts?
Well, Ron Rivera is going to call the defense. For some reason, Mike, they just love playing man coverage, even though they were getting torched by everybody. Like, I just didn't understand it. You got a rookie corner, and Emmanuel Forbes out there. You ask him to go up against, you know, A.J. Brown or CeeDee Lamb. Like, it wasn't a fair fight. So maybe Ron will play more zone and keep it in front of them, and maybe they'll have a little better of a chance. The one thing that I think, Mike, that Miami is really conscious about is they get rid of the ball very quickly. They just don't want Tua to hold the ball and get hit like he did last year. And so far it's worked, but they don't get the same amount of explosive plays that they got a year ago, letting, you know, Tyreek and Jalen and the group get down the field. And so they seem very conscious about getting the ball out probably in 2 seconds or less, Mike. And so we'll see how they run the ball. I mean, they, you know, Raheem Mostert's had a good season. He's a good back. It all kind of comes off the run game. I think they're still going to put up a good number against Washington.
Baldy, one of the stories this NFL season, at least in the betting community, has been about how we've seen lower scoring games. And we've talked about this on our podcast, the GM Shuffle podcast, about how, like, the product seems like it's a little bit down this year in the NFL. From a more general standpoint, would you kind of pinpoint offensive line play as to why that might be the case, about, hey, we're not getting those explosive offenses, we're not getting the offenses that can sustain drives here when we're seeing these games on Sundays?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Jets, you look at New England, you look at the Giants, you look at some teams that are just broken up front. I mean, it's a different offensive line every week. But and even if they play the same group, they're not very good, and they're not improving. And so the quarterbacks, whoever's there, haven't shown any improvement. And so you get these, you know, just blowout games, Dallas against the Giants, 40-0 to start the season. I mean, you're getting too many games that are just uncompetitive because, you know, the losing team can't field a quality offensive line to protect their quarterback. And if the quarterback does get protected, in a lot of cases, they're not very good. And so it's the same story as it was 60 years ago. I mean, when it was a 12-team league, there wasn't enough good quarterbacks. And there's just not enough good quarterbacks to go around right now.
Yeah, no question. Baldy, who's your MVP for the league this so far? After week 13, who would you vote for the MVP of the league?
Well, I saw Brock Purdy throw a perfect game the other day against Tampa, Mike. I was out there for that. I mean, it's kind of hard to look at Brock Purdy and say, how does anybody better than this guy? I mean, honestly, I know you can say Dak Prescott and you can throw some guys that, you know, and you have to include Mahomes, although the numbers aren't great this year, but he finds ways to win. You know, I wouldn't say Lamar is an MVP at this point, even though they're playing really good football in Baltimore. But to me, I watch Brock Purdy and I don't see a weakness in anything that he does.
Brock Purdy right now, 11-1.
You're preaching to the choir. I agree. I mean, if people will stop saying that the guy's a seventh-round pick and just watch him play, he might get some MVP votes. But I agree. I don't know what more the guy has to do. I don't know what he has to do to get some respect out of people. Like, the guy's good. The guy is really good. And his accuracy is elite. It's at a level where we're going to see it tomorrow. Even in the rain, it'll be good.
Mike, look, I don't want to make any comparisons, but you were in San Francisco when Joe Montana got drafted. You saw him up close right away. I mean, to me, like I went and talked to him before the game. Mike, I was talking to him about ice cream parlors in Ames, Iowa. Like, he's as relaxed as you can possibly get. Like, the game is he literally makes the game look easy. But yet, I mean, it's all preparation and study, and he knows where everybody's at. And I don't know. Like, I can't find a single comp to the guy in the league right now, the way that he plays the game.
High praise there for Brock Purdy. 19 touchdown passes, only 6 interceptions, has the highest QBR in the league, and he's on one of the best teams in the league, if not the best team in the 49ers. We'll see how that unfolds tomorrow. He is Brian Baldinger. Check out his work at the NFL Network. NFL analyst, also does great work on Twitter doing the hashtag Baldy's Breakdowns. Baldy, safe travels to your game, and be well.
Great job, Baldy. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, Mike. See you, buddy.
Awesome stuff. Matt Eumanns joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
In the NBA, the game can change in an instant, but no matter how the action unfolds, you know DraftKings Sportsbook has your back. This week, new customers can score 150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSiN. The crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe here in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. And joining us now in studio, like he's done all football season long, the one and only Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN Tonight, which you can check out Monday through Friday, 9 to midnight Eastern, and also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Matt, how we doing, man? It was a fun Pac-12 title game that we had last night, and we got a whole slate today.
Yeah, it was actually good to see Washington show up and play well right from the start. I bet Washington plus 10 last night. I thought that line was out of whack. All I heard all week was how Oregon was going to blow out the Huskies, and it was a mismatch. So it's kind of good to hear a lot of the talking heads be wrong about that one.
All right, so Matt, here's my dilemma today. Yep. If Ohio State's sitting there, Ryan Day's on the outside looking in again, and if Florida State loses to Louisville, do you think they allow, and just say Texas struggles with Oklahoma State, you know, and they only win by 10 instead of covering the 15 that's aligned today.
Uh-huh.
Do you think, and Alabama doesn't beat Georgia. Okay, those two things. Do you think that Ohio State gets in?
No, I don't think Ohio State gets in almost any scenario I look at. And I don't think the Buckeyes deserve to be in. And
me too.
You know, here's the problem with the playoff committee. They act like it's transparent on TV, but it's anything but. You know, that's a dog and pony show on ESPN. It's created for ratings and clicks and BS. But the bottom line is, with the playoff committee, there's a lot of under-the-table dealings, backroom politics, and stuff like that that goes on. Yeah, the Big Ten and the SEC have the most power. And that's another reason why I think Florida State's got to be nervous about getting squeezed out of this thing, because the ACC does not have a lot of influence in the big picture. But Michigan is going to be in. Washington's in. The winner of Georgia-Alabama's in. And if Texas wins, I don't care if it's by 1 or by 21, I think Texas needs to be the fourth team in. If it's not Florida State or Texas, I'm not going to cry whichever one it is. I think Florida State's going to get beat by Louisville, so I should probably take care of that. But Texas has a win at Alabama. Longhorns won in Tuscaloosa. That's got to count for something, and that's the best win any team's got. I don't see how Texas gets left out. Should get left out. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens tomorrow morning when the committee makes their 4-game selection. We'll stay with the college football for this segment. We'll hit your NFL plays coming up in the next segment here to wrap the thing up. But Georgia-Alabama is a really interesting game. Obviously, we know the Georgia, two-time defending national champions, taking on the Tide. It's a 4.5-point spread. Total's at 54 here. Anything for you with this Georgia-Bama game here? Anything you like?
Well, you know, I do think Carson Beck has matured, you know, in the offense, and he's, I think, at 22 touchdown passes, 6 picks, completing about 70% of his passes. And really, he's matured. I think in late in the year, games against Florida, Missouri, Ole Miss, Tennessee, he was a lot better. And, you know, Brock Bowers missed some time in there, too. But Carson Beck matured. Also, Jalen Milroe came on strong, I think, in the Alabama offense. So I've got two plays on this game. Anytime you give me Nick Saban and more than a field goal, I'm going to take a serious look at it. And the last time the Tide played Georgia in the SEC championship game, and Alabama was an underdog, I took the points with Bama. I'm doing it again today. I also played this over the total of 54 this week. These defenses are not anywhere near as dominant as they have been in recent years. And I do think there's a chance we get kind of a shootout to develop between these teams today, with the quarterbacks playing at a much higher level here in the second half of the season.
How about you love to, you think Texas belongs in there, but Oklahoma State, you think the line has gone too far above where it needs to be at 15? You're going to take the Cowboys at 15?
I did take the Cowboys at 15. I made the number basically 11. And, you know, it gets to the point where the line inflation has to mean something to you as a handicap or two. And I understand that Texas needs style points, and that's going to be a big part of the discussion. But Mike Gundy is dangerous as an underdog. And the last time the Cowboys were at home against Texas, they beat the Longhorns outright. Cowboys were underdogs in that game. They were underdogs against Oklahoma this season. Beat the Sooners in the Bedlam game. Gundy is just better in the underdog role. And also, the Cowboys have the nation's leading rusher, Ollie Gordon. And Alan Bowman has played better. He passed for 334 yards in that game against Oklahoma. So he's capable of doing it. I think the Texas offensive and defensive lines are much stronger, and that's where the Longhorns have the big advantage. But I also don't see the Texas offense making a bunch of explosive plays. You're leading rushers out, and I think the formula is there for Okie State to keep this close. I don't think the Cowboys win the game. I'm not going to go that far, but I'll say Texas wins the game by like 7-10.
Maybe make the Longhorn fans sweat a little bit there as they're kicking things off.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that the playoff situation comes down to this. I've said for like 20 years I thought it should be an 8-team playoff, not a 4-team playoff. But, you know, you get the 4 teams. And, Michael, you know how tough it is to win in Tuscaloosa. The Longhorns won there in September. That's got to mean something when it gets down to who the 4 playoff teams are tomorrow.
Well, I agree with you. It means something. But to me, the September, that win, you know, the way Milroe was playing in that game, it's a different Milroe today than it was then. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm not anti-Texas. What I'm anti is Ohio State not going to a conference championship and sitting by, eating the popcorn, and then somebody letting them in because they're Ohio State. Yeah. That's what I'm worried about. And, you know, Texas, if they've lost, they could have lost to Kansas State as well. So there's an argument to be made if you're Ryan Day and the Big Ten committee people to make within that room. And that's, as you said, the politics behind those closed doors is what really gets it. I mean, even if Florida State goes undefeated – You know, I mean, are they going to really go if they play Georgia as the one seed? Are they really going to be? Is that going to be a good game for us to watch? I don't know.
Well, if you look at the hypothetical lines that Chris Andrews at the South Point put out this week, Georgia 13 over Florida State, Michigan 12 over Florida. How about Texas minus 7 against Florida State? You know, that's, I know there's not an odds maker on the committee, and that's not what it comes down to, but if you're picking the four best teams, Texas is in that four. And, you know, you can make the argument that, Texas had some close games down the stretch against Houston, TCU, K-State, teams like that. But Ohio State should not have won the game at Notre Dame, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, I think, you know what I love? You say there shouldn't be a handicapper in the room. Well, they have all these computers in front of them. Like, what are they looking at? Like, what are they looking at? They're power rating the teams, right? Why wouldn't you call somebody who power rates the teams for a living that puts the lights on in a building, right? Like, why wouldn't you have Jimmy Vaccaro in there or Chrissy Andrews or somebody that does this? They're looking at these numbers like they've got some secret code to the launch missiles. Like, they don't. Like, you know, and then they don't even have a coach of football in there. They have nobody in there that could tell you about games and who's playing better. They're just looking at numbers. Oh. Like, why not have somebody who spends their life looking at numbers that depends on being right with the number?
Well, Condoleezza Rice knows a lot about football, Michael. I'm just kidding.
No. They're all watching the games together today, so maybe they can come to a consensus.
What he said is exactly, I've said this for years too. It's a joke how they pretend like they're, you know, curing cancer, or they're in there, they're going to reveal the launch codes to the space shuttle. All right, it's pretty easy to rank the top four teams in college football, and they act like this is such a difficult process where they all have to put their heads together. It's such nonsense. It really is.
It's a dog and pony show is what's going
and
on.
You could put an odds maker like Chris Andrews or Kenny White or somebody like that on that panel, because, you know, that should mean something, too, that Texas would be a 7-point favorite over Florida State. Okay.
They say they want the four best. You mentioned Florida State. They're in the ACC title game, now down to one. You like Louisville in the game, but you also have a play on the total.
Well, I did, because I had heard Thursday night the Florida State's number two quarterback was not going to play, Tate Rodemaker. It's going to be Brock Glenn, who's got four pass attempts all season. So I did make Louisville my best bet in the Circa Friday football invitational. I played Louisville plus 2.5 and plus 1.5 this week, and also under the total of 47. At times, you know, Jeff Brohm, I call him Big Game Brohm, because he'll pull out some trick plays. He's going to empty the playbook in this game. This is the biggest game of his coaching career. And he did a great job actually scheming at offense last year in the Purdue-Michigan Big Ten championship game, where Purdue outgained Michigan by about 80 yards, 27-17 in first down, 34 minutes time of possession. And that was a Michigan defense we thought was dominant at the time. I think Brohm's going to have a great game plan here. And at times this season, that Louisville defense has been better than Brohm's offense. He's 28-15 ATS career as a dog. And even though he's just a small dog here, I think Louisville's going to take down Florida State with its number three quarterback.
I get concerned with the fact that, like, everyone is rooting against Florida State, because, like, nobody wants them in the playoff. But, like, do they play that up as a motivational factor? FSU versus everybody.
I'm sure they will, but they're also playing with their number three quarterback.
That's very true.
Yeah.
We will break down the NFL with you, Matt Humans. Hopefully it goes your way and we can get them out of there. Right. On the other side to wrap up the show, this is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The holidays are here. Let Omaha Steaks take the guesswork out of gifting. Go to omahasteaks.com and save 50% off site-wide. Plus, when you use promo code VSiN at checkout, you get an additional $30 off your order. Visit omahasteaks.com. Take advantage of the 50% off site-wide. Plus, use the promo code VSiN. Minimum order may be required. Man, you can get those juicy mouthwatering burgers, cut filet mignon, man, like jumbo franks, whatever you want, Matt Humans. Mm. Omaha Steaks has got it. I'll take it all. Tomahawk. I don't know, Michael Lombardi's a big tomahawk guy. Yeah. Throw that on the grill, get it going, medium rare. Is that what we're doing tonight, Michael? What's up?
I don't think we're doing that. I think we're going to go watch. You're going to have a little bit of a Georgia Alabama game tonight. You know, a little bit of a kind of just enjoy it. I don't think we're doing the grill. I had to shut the grill down. I mean, it's freezing out there. I had to close the kitchen
put
up.
Put the parka on. Let's
go. Yeah, literally, I'll show you. I got the cover for it. I had to put the cover on it. You know, and so we'll have to work around it. We'll see you back here. We got to wait till April to get that bad boy off.
Yeah, it gets a little chilly. Bill Berman, you watching it with him, or is he going to the game?
Of course, also? Yeah.
Okay, you watching it.
I mean, look, you know who called that play for Alabama at the end of the game, you? I mean, you know who
fourth
did that.
31.
I mean, sure. Yeah, fourth. He had it right there in his back pocket. Sure.
Love it. This is
the Milroe miracle. How about that? How bad was that defensive game plan by Alabama on that last play, Michael? I mean, can you put that in words? Or by Auburn.
Yeah,
Auburn.
Sorry. I kept saying, like, you know, I'm thinking to myself when I'm watching the play, like, all they got to do is if there's any chance they're going to catch it, just tackle the guy, right? Just tackle him.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, because in college it's only a 15-yard thing. So, yeah, those situations, it happens constantly. I mean, look, we saw that play, and earlier in the week on Friday, on Black Friday, we saw the Hail Mary. You don't get any work. I mean, when you try a Hail Mary and you don't get the ball into the end zone, I mean, seriously. Like, what is the point of trying that play? I mean, I kept saying to myself, I said this to Femi on the pod, I mean, Al Davis would have gone berserk, you know, which cracks me up. I love all these people that talk about the Raider way. The Raider way. The Raider way. The Raider way. They don't even have a clue what the Raider way, unless you were in with that room with him and you've been around him for a long time, you're just talking. You're just talking. You have no idea what the Raider way is.
Raiders are on the bye week right now. That's where the way of things go right now. But let's get into Matt Eumanns' NFL betting card. And we'll start with the game of the week. Niners at the Eagles. San Francisco a 3-point favorite, total 48. Is this just a brutal spot here for Philly?
Well, there's a lot of things here, and I'll throw this at you guys. So the last four games, the Philadelphia Eagles have been outgained by 109 yards per game.
Oh.
And 505 to 378 by the Bills, 336-238 by the Chiefs, 406-292 by Femi's Cowboys, 472-374 by the Commanders. Okay, so I'm not saying Philly is a bad team, mediocre team, or anything like that, but the Eagles have been lucky late in some of these games. They could have lost all four of those games. They won all four.
Yeah.
Right? 4-1 score games. Let's look deeper into the defense. The last two games, the Philly defense has allowed 341 rushing yards. That's a god-awful number. Pass defense is allowing 255.7 yards per game. That ranks 29th in the NFL. And 23 passing touchdowns ranks next to last. I still think this Philly defense got a lot of problems that nobody's really paying attention to because they're 10-1. You know, when you keep winning games, the critics don't pay attention to what's going wrong. Jalen Hurts has 14 turnovers. He had 8 all of last season. And I also think you're catching the 49ers at the wrong time here, too, because Brock Purdy's back playing at a high level. Christian McCaffrey's on a roll. And you got multiple playmakers who can spread the field and beat the Eagles. Eagles are kind of soft over the middle on defense. And you've got McCaffrey, who can burn you over the middle, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle. I think this is a bad matchup for the Eagles, and they're catching the 49ers at the wrong time.
I agree. At some point, it's going to catch up to them. You know, the fact that they've given up all these yards. I mean, they're 30th in the league in third down defense. I mean, Baldy made the point earlier before you came on, Matt, that, you know, they struggle to cover. Look, they struggled to cover last year. Yep. That was all this nonsense about Bradbury's an elite cover guy and Slay's an elite cover. They couldn't cover anybody last year. The problem was that you couldn't block them. That's the same problem this year. But Hargrave being out is different now. And one thing we do know, I know Lane Johnson hasn't given up a sack since Lincoln was elected president. I get that. But you could put more pressure on this Eagle front than most teams have. I think San Francisco will. You know, you're just, to me, this line moved 4 points. I mean, that's a lot of points for a line to move away from the home team. The home team's 10-1. That's a big statement right there.
Yeah, I don't like those 4-point line moves either. In fact, I bet the 49ers at -2.5. I knew this was headed to 3, but I also think Philly -1 was a bad opener. I think that was the wrong number. This should have opened like San Francisco -1 or 1.5. And I think that's where the number should have opened. Okay.
In my power rankings, I had San Francisco as a 1.5-point favorite. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I, when I broke the game down, that's what I had. And I was surprised. I was a little bit like you. At worst, I thought it might be a pick'em to start off with and then let the public decide where the money was going to go.
Money has gone all the way through San Francisco. We'll see how this thing closes tomorrow at kickoff there. How about the Denver and the Houston game? I'm really interested in this football game mm-hmm. here. The Broncos catching 3 now. It was 3.5 earlier. Now they're catching 3. Some interest in Denver. Total 47.
Yeah, they've also been catching a lot of breaks. And the Broncos won 5 in a row to go from 1-5 to 6-5. You know, and Russell Wilson is not really playing all that well. He's not playing as poorly as he did a year ago, but I think the Broncos are a little bit of a lucky roll that's going to end here. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Texans fan either. I don't really like laying the 3, but I'm anti-Broncos in this spot. I think this 5-game win streak's been a little bit phony, so I'm going to play the home favorite here.
Matt, last week, 12 of the 13 games the favorite won. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be an adjustment, right? There's going to have to be something back to the means in terms of the dogs are going to bark a little bit louder this week than they did last week. And there's a lot of ugly dogs on this thing, right? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of ugly dogs. The Jets being an ugly dog, Washington's an ugly dog. I don't know if you get any uglier than the Saints as an ugly dog who have yet to cover at home all this season. Right. But you're going to go ahead and do it. I mean, I wanted to take the Lions, but I just think the at some point the Saints are going to cover a home game. I'm not saying they're going to win, but they're going to cover a home game.
Yeah, I'm not going to predict a win here for the Saints either. But 4 points I think is a little bit too much for the Lions to be laying on the road. And you know, there are a lot of ugly dogs on this card, and this might be the ugliest. This might even be uglier than the Jets or the Patriots. Hmm. Derek Carr might be without his top 3 receivers, and that's one thing that concerns me here with the Saints. So it's going to be a lot of Alvin Kamara, I think, in this game. But I'm also looking at the Detroit side of it, and I'll make this quick because we're going to run out of time. We got more important games to talk about. I think the Detroit defense is in decline. Jared Goff is slumping. And the Lions, in my mind, are shaky road favorites in this spot off 2 really poor home performances against the Bears and the Packers.
Yeah, the receiver injury is what scared me off of this mm-hmm. one here. Let's yep. get to the game for our Nesson audience. You like the Patriots catching the 5.5 at home.
I don't really like it.
But you bet it.
I feel like I'm fine.
You got to make the play. I agree with Matt. Matty, you got to make the call. If there's ever going to be a game they're going to play good in, mm-hmm. this would be the one.
I think it is. I feel like I'm forced to make this play here. Patriots +5.5. The Bailey Zappe switch at quarterback is probably a positive. Mac Jones just looks like a broken man at this point and is turning the ball over, some ridiculous turnovers. But I say turn the game over to the running backs, Ramondre Stevenson, Zeke Elliott, and do some groundwork against this weak L.A. run defense. And also, the Patriots, who are 1-7 against the spread in the past 8, I think are sitting on a competent performance. Let's put it that way. One of these weeks, they're going to put it together and look like a good football team. I think it's going to be this week. And what better time to do it than against Brandon Staley and the Chargers, who should not be laying this type of number on the road.
I agree. They shouldn't be. And look, if you really watch the Patriots games the last 3 weeks, you know, they've run the football effectively. Mm-hmm. Now, yep. they've also turned it over. Yep. And they've made some incredible bad plays in terms of the passing game with the quarterback. And I'm not saying Zappe's going to be any better, but at least that there'll be a fresher start and maybe they'll build some momentum. If they get behind in the game, that's going to be the issue. The only 2 games they've won so far this year is they had the lead at the half against the Jets and that vaulted Jet defense that they ran for 158 yards against and the Buffalo Bills.
Yep. How about Sunday Night Football, Packers hosting the Chiefs?
I'm taking the points with the Packers. I know we're out of time, but I did play the Packers +6, and I think the Packers are kind of a team on the rise, a team to keep an eye on down the stretch, too, because the schedule gets really soft for Green Bay after this game, too, and it's back-to-back road games for the Chiefs.
they could ever pull off this upset, they could be cooking with gas and maybe get into the playoffs, and uh-oh, Big Daddy will be happy.
I bet LaFleur has a sharp haircut. There's a bet you do not want to make. LaFleur's will look good Sunday night. Buzz, it'll be perfectly combed.
It's been 10 days since we've seen him, so he's better come with his best.
He's had two haircuts since then.
We'll see you guys tomorrow. Ben Wilson and Pam Maldonado coming up next, Live Bet Sunday.